probably on the same Sunday. A couple of words of introduction that I thought of when I was given the assignment by Bartelt. Normally this would be about what I would do for a circuit meeting. And usually the Sunday following the circuit meeting was what we covered. But then I'd also have about another 40 minutes to go beyond just the lexical or grammatical notes and do a bit of work on homiletics. I was told that I should do a little bit of homiletics as well, as much as I can, but I think we're kind of constrained to time as far as doing that. Let me begin with a prayer, though. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable on thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Now, I take it we don't have to read the Hebrew and embarrass myself and how poorly I read Hebrew, or do you want the Hebrew read? Okay. The first thing that I noted in verse 1, I thought about perhaps translating Yahweh Roi as evocative, although I know there's no real justification for calling it evocative according to the structure or the pointing of it. But I thought, well, gee, this may, you know, this could well fit into the rest of the psalm in the way that this is a confession. Yahweh, my shepherd, I will not want. You are confessing to the, or I will not lack. You are confessing to the Lord that you are counting on him to provide what you need. Psalm 23. Do you have it? Okay. When we get to the verb itself in this verse, we're usually conditioned to hearing the imperfect rendered as a future. I will not want, or I shall not want. I'll throw it out to you to consider that you could also take the verb, the imperfect, as a durative present, as you normally can. I am not lacking. Again, dealing with the idea that this is a confession to Yahweh, that, or to other people as well, of what you expect from the Lord. Into verse 2, Naot. Note, please, that is a variant. Well, I wouldn't say a variant form. BDB says usually this form occurs in the plural construct, and the root of the word is nava. So when you if you don't have your index or some other parsing aid, that you start looking at that particular word and you go crazy trying to find it in BDB without having that parsing aid, knowing that that's the usual form for pasture or meadow. Among the various translations that I looked at, one in particular, Leupold, said he wanted to go with the idea of meadow because the verb says he makes me to lie down, and you don't have sheep feeding when they're lying down. So let's move the translation away from the idea of feeding at this point. It's a rest time that the psalmist is trying to bring across at this point. Also, deshe, grass, is the basic translation, but we should also recognize that the verbal root, talks about sprouting or growing or being green. So then you might think in terms in the pasture lands of southern Palestine of being green only in the springtime when the rains come. Might be worthwhile considering in your homiletics. Moving on, skipping over the cause to lie down, it's a hefil imperfect and third masculine singular. To almay, upon water, or upon waters, I should say. The difficulty I found with this, when I looked at this, I noticed that we are accustomed to saying by still waters. And I looked at that carefully, and I looked at several commentaries and came to the conclusion there is nothing here that suggests the quality of the water itself, but that the resting place is beside water. And you might try and dig a little bit further to say, what kind of water are you going to encounter in southern Palestine if it's still water? Is it going to be fouled? Is it going to be stagnant? But if you have running water, it's fresh. So the emphasis here is not on the water being still, but the resting place being beside water. And that you get because the water is construct waters of resting places. Okay? The verb yinahaleni, lead, guide to watering station and cause to rest there, bring to a place of rest. So the translation would be, in grassy pastures he will cause me to lie down, to resting places he will lead me. Notice I changed again the verb that you're normally accustomed to be consistent to the way that we normally hear the first verb, because if they're all imperfect, why not translate them all the same way? Yahweh is my shepherd, he will lead me, he will guide me. Or translate it, Yahweh is my shepherd, he is doing this, or he is leading me. Going on to verse 3. The Yeshovev, I'm forgetting that I didn't make any note about Nefesh to myself. Who needs to know about Nefesh, please? Do you need any prompting as to what Nefesh can mean? Have you not heard it often enough? Nefesh is living soul, living being, person, not just soul in a Platonic sense, but encompassing every soul. Then to the verb itself, it's poleo, or the comparable binyam in a hollow root verb for the pl. So it's an active intensive. He restores, he refreshes, he repairs, he brings back. Interestingly enough, you will then get the idea that it is not the soul that is doing the action, which could be a possible mistake by a novice, but here you've got the masculine verb giving you understanding that the soul is the object of the verb here, and also that the subject would then be whoever was previously mentioned, and that would be then Yahweh. And notice you've got a slight chiasm here. You go from one verb to the next verb, kind of set right there. There is an atnach, you notice, under Yeshovev, so that you do have that ability to pair those two verbs together. You might then say, all right, the restoring comes in how he then leads and guides. The next noun, leads and guides in Ma'agalei. I had an interesting time with this one, trying to run down exactly what the derivation might be or could be, and most people focused in more so on the tzedek that follows. What kind of paths are these? I came up with better to call it a track or a wagon rut, because that's its apparent derivation, or the best derivation I could come up with. He leads me in right wagon ruts, or wagon ruts of righteousness. That struck me as rather interesting. But that's the best I could do with it. The other possibilities, you don't think of it as being a rut, but when I saw this or when I came across this, I was reminded of a piece in Sunday's Post-Dispatch about the Civil War battlefields, and they showed a picture of the battlefield of Antietam and this road that is sunken in the battlefield. Again, probably from wagons passing through so often that the earth around it sinks down. I'll leave it to you to try and work with that and come up with a decent image. It's not an easy one to fuss with. But then we go to the point, paths or ruts or tracks of tzedek. And how do you deal with that? Tzedek, as several of my professors have said, is forensic, or is it ethical and moral? And when you start to discuss or look into the commentaries, how they discuss it, they come up with the discussion centering around whether it's straight paths or proper paths, rather than paths of righteousness, paths of God's righteousness. And this is an important consideration eventually. What kind of paths are we talking about here when we talk about tzedek? And how do we understand this? The worst one, I feel, is Dahud, who says, okay, verse 3 is parallel with verse 2. And he wants to then take the tzedek as meaning rich and translate this, he leads me in luxuriant pastures. Whoa, terrible. But at least it gives us a clue that maybe we should be looking back into verse 2 to parallel. He leads me beside still waters, and then, or he restores my soul, and then we parallel with that and saying, he restores my soul by leading me in paths of righteousness. For the sake of his name, on account of his name, as befits his name. His name, of course, it's his character, his reputation, his essence, his being. So we come up then with verse 3, my soul, he will refresh, he will guide me in the tracks of righteousness on account of his name. Verse 4, gum, also, even though, when... I like that best. Even though when I will walk the gay valley, no problem there, easy one. Then we come to Salmavet. And according to a lot of commentators, there is no such thing as a compound word in normal Hebrew. But BDB and several other lexicons say that this is a compound noun of tsal, shadow, and mavet, death. The best reason why is you've got in the Septuagint skias thanatou, shadow of death. Why not go with that? And even if there isn't any compound nouns in Hebrew, or compound nouns, you do have compound names, and this could have been a virtual place, some very treacherous ravine that got the name shadow of death because of various deaths that occurred there. So we'll keep it. Imadi with me. I hope there should be no problem there. Then we come to Shivtaka, rod, staff, or scepter, or shepherd's implement. One commentator wanted to make the next word a parenthetical to the first one. In other words, Mishantecha is the same thing as Shivtecha, or two different names for the same implement used by shepherds. I find that a bit hard when you get down to the verb, which is in plural. So make them different. Make them two different implements that a shepherd uses, one as a weapon, and the other, the second one, which verbal root means to lean on or to support oneself. So then you've got the rod, or I translated cudgel, and I found at least one other commentator that translated it cudgel. and then the staff, the second one, as the shepherd's crook. Nacham, or we have it here in the PL, imperfect, third masculine plural with the suffix, comfort or console me. Why not stay with comfort? Or reassures is one commentator's effort to say, well, two weapons or these implements don't really comfort and console like we would normally think of it, but the presence of our shepherd with these implements reassures and comforts us in the midst of times of treachery. Did I come to the end of that verse? Well, I pass over entirely Yara. Okay, so then the translation of verse 4, my soul he will refresh, he will guide me in the... Oh, I'm sorry, I'm back on 3. Even when I will walk in the valley of the shadow of death's shadow, I will not fear evil, for you are with me, your cudgel and your crook, they will comfort me. Verse 5. Ta'aruch. I should read this in the Hebrew text. My printer doesn't do it accurately as it should. Ta'aruch lefanai. Arrange, or arach, arrange, set in order. Call imperfect, second masculine, singular, you. And notice here it's something that is oftentimes belittled by the critics. We have a flip-flopping between third masculine singular and second masculine singular in speaking of Yahweh. Up to this point, we have had particularly the third masculine singular addressing Yahweh. So there's no direct address of Yahweh. Here it suddenly switches over to second person. You prepare, you arrange or set in order in front of me or before me shulchan, a table, which originally was a skin or a leather mat spread on the ground, but later on is also used to temple furniture. So something involving a meal, something involving perhaps also ritual is one consideration, but I would kind of push the ritual idea off to the side because you've got a lot of confusion that some commentators throw in there because of that. Neged, what is conspicuous, what is in front of, inside of, or opposite to. And then sorai, it's a call participle, an active participle with a suffix me, for me. The verb means to show hostility toward, to vex. There is also another noun that is not so obviously derived from the verb, which does mean adversary or foe. So here I'm trying to translate this as someone who shows hostility toward or someone who vexes. Dishanta. The lexical meanings for this is make fat, and is involved with the application of fatty ashes from a sacrifice. The implication seems to be that you are making somebody rich. Okay? And remember that if you burn a piece of meat on your barbecue grill, the outer pieces of fat will still remain rather juicy. And you could take that and squeeze it over somebody's head and squeeze out oil. But then we have the next word, bashamen, fatness or fat, but also olive oil or oil in general. So he makes my head fat with oil. Interesting way of thinking. The last two words of verse 5 present a bit of an interesting twist because there's no verb in those things and we almost always think of some sort of verb being attached to them. But essentially, its cup is saturated. Saturation. Cup is saturated. Kind of odd concept as well. To be, it's like, I didn't look this up, maybe I should have, it just occurred to me. Is this the same word that is used of the fleece that was put out by Gideon? I'm not sure. I'll have to look that up afterwards. But that's something that you could consider as well. So the translation, you will arrange before me a table in the sight of those who vex me. You make my head fat with oil. My cup is saturated. Now you can do better poetry than that, but I'm trying to get the implication of how you... Yeah, you make my head fat with oil. That's good. Rich. Okay, let's do it that way. Will you make my head rich with oil? Verse 6. Ach, surely. Goodness. Vachesed. Oh, my goodness, yes. Goodness and kindness when referring to human beings, when referring to God, it's loving kindness in redemption and preservation, mercy, goodness in general. And this is obviously referring to God. Goodness and mercy. And now another interesting one. Yerdafuni. Got a little bit of interesting competition here. My goodness. Call imperfect, third masculine, plural, referring to goodness and mercy. But the meanings of this verb is to pursue or to chase, to put to flight the defeated foe. Who's the defeated foe? Our consciences or our rebellious nature? So God's mercy and goodness put to flight or pursue our rebelliousness. Isn't that an interesting thought? Now what did I have there yet? Okay. Pursue me all the days of my life. Atnach, pause. And I will dwell in the house or in the household of Yahweh to the length or to long days. Surely goodness and kindness will pursue me the whole days of my life, and I will remain in the house of Yahweh to the length of days. Any questions or comments from you? He pointed out that we say in English, the cup runneth over, that implies more than saturation, but when it rains, you have supersaturated air. Okay? Very quick physical note there. When you have something saturated, you notice it because it starts to drip out. The fleece is saturated because Gideon can pick it up and squeeze it and pull and get so much water out of it. Luther does not quite go that far. He says, you make my glass full up. Okay? And if you've ever been to a nice beer hall where they do that, you know that as soon as you move the glass, it spills. Any other comments or questions?